I think for so long, we've only talked about the costs associated with not going to college. And we typically only discuss those in terms of like opportunity cost or missed salary. But because the cost of college has increased so rapidly and there's a heavy reliance on student loans, we can now talk about the financial cost of needing loans in order to go to college. So I think if we're going to continue to encourage kids to pursue higher educations, we have to make sure that it's a holistic conversation and that we are just as passionate about the options to finance education as we are the passion that kids should go get it. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. Today, we're talking about how to offset the cost of education with a 529 plan. Yeah, this is a topic that has been on our mind, I should say, in our heart
a lot. In our content plan.
It has. It's like popped up in our personal life, our work life. It's like everywhere. And so I think part of it is because at the time of recording this, it also, we were just coming out of like graduation season. Mm-hmm. And I think that might have played a role in it. But there's been a lot of talk about saving for college, the cost of college. And so we wanted to make sure that we met people right at that moment. And we've done everything but record a podcast. And so we said, you know what? Now's the perfect time.
Yeah, we've done a webinar. We've done live training. And what's funny is since we've started talking about it, what I've noticed is a debate around how to pronounce it. So the money nerds pronounce each number, 529, 529 plan. But if you're a non-money nerd or maybe like a secret money nerd, you just kind of read it like every other integer in the hundreds. You say 529. And so I am team 529, and I made this joke on Twitter, and it totally bombed. Like, no likes, no retweets. I think one day later, I got a, like, mercy like from some stranger.
Your mom.
Yeah. But it was basically about, you know that song Dolly Parton sings, 925?
Yeah.
925. So I read that. I said that somebody on FinTok or financial TikTok, where they already, you know, be singing and dancing. Somebody on FinTok should make a parody version of Dolly Parton's 925 and call it 529. Yeah, that was the reaction I got. Nobody gave me a single like LOL, great idea.
We can ask the producer to drop in like a laugh track or something. Like
TC, give me a laugh track.
Give me a laugh track.
At least a rim shot.
Flash the applause sign right there.
529 something something, pay for college.
Yeah. You definitely sound your age right now. So, you know, we are talking about TikTok here, so I can see why they were like, I don't even know Dolly who.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, in all seriousness, this is something that I've been thinking about because education is very important to us and has been since Bo was born. Like, I remember when we were first looking for his daycare. And for those that don't know, our moms were Bo's first caretakers. And so they would take care of him at our home for the first year and a half of his life while we went to work in an office. But once Julian left his job to pursue full-time entrepreneurship, that was no longer a viable option. Like, having your mom and your child there while you're trying to build a business is just adding stress on top of stress. Yeah. No shade to the moms. But plus, we were moving to like a new neighborhood that had great options that would be close to our new home. So anyway, when we first started, I pulled together this list of options of daycare. One was lower priced, one was sort of mid-priced with the option to do add-ons, and then one was like high-priced with all the bells and whistles, like in-house catering and special playgrounds and all sorts of like fancy stuff. And there was probably like a $300 a month difference between all of them, but when you multiply that across, you know, 3 or 4 years, it definitely made us think how little things, little, you know, features in education choices can absolutely change the way you plan financially for education and childcare. We ultimately chose the mid-range one and have been like super happy with that choice. His teachers have been fantastic. The school has been supportive. And we've been able to learn what kind of learning styles, teaching styles, and even classroom styles that he thrives best in. But there was certainly a financial component to selecting that option.
Yeah, and I give you a lot of credit for that because you led the way in terms of doing research. I think I went on a couple.
Yeah, once we narrowed down the list, like that. Yeah, I had a long list and we had to narrow it down to like three.
Yeah.
And you joined me on tours of those three.
Yeah, I think we made the right choice. I completely agree. The daycare that he goes to, they do a great job with him. And we've watched him blossom, you know, and again, particularly because he spent his first year being raised by his grandma. It felt like it took him a while to get warmed up a little bit, but they were there with him every step of the way. But to your point, we decided pretty early in our relationship that, you know, preparing for college was something that we really wanted to do. I remember being really excited about it. I'm not exactly sure why, but I just knew, as I was kind of imagining who he might become, and then I guess I was kind of coming into my own as a father and really thinking about my own college experience, I was like, all right, I want to make sure that he, you know, doesn't have to go through some of the things that I went through just to kind of get through college. And to give the people listening a little bit of background there, you know, I actually have 3 degrees. A couple weeks after high school graduation, I jumped right into culinary school because that was important to me. And I figured that that was the best way to sort of get on the path to becoming a professional chef. I had to work all through culinary school. And so I've always kind of had this work and go to school at the same time approach. This is what was taught to me. This is what I believed was what most people did. And you know, in some ways, it was actually quite beneficial, especially while I was in culinary school, because most people didn't have any actual real cooking experience. Meanwhile, I was learning how to cook and cooking professionally at the same time. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened when I got my business degree in undergrad. I was working during the evenings and I was going to school during the day. And so I've always kind of worked and went to school full time. But then in graduate school, to earn an MBA, I took it a step further. I actually got a job at the school. And so I was a graduate research assistant. I was paid a stipend and I worked about 20 hours a week at the university. And the benefit of that was that they gave me a discount on tuition. I still had to pay all of the fees and the other stuff, but my tuition was $25. And so it was a bit of an employee benefit. And so in addition to working at the school, I was also earning my master's degree during the days I wasn't actually working. And then I was also working nights and in some cases weekends. And so at the end of the day, I was tired. At the end of that entire experience, I was tired. And again, I look back, it was a great experience, but I know for a fact I did not have an opportunity to focus as much as I could. I did not have an opportunity to dig as deep into my schoolwork. And I certainly did not have a chance to take advantage of all of the other benefits that college had to offer. And so when I think about my son and I think about the rate of the world changing, I really want to make sure that he has those opportunities. And I think one of the best things would be ensuring that he doesn't have to worry about going to school. Or and if he does, for whatever reason, he will certainly not have to work as hard as I had to work while going to school. He'll actually have an opportunity to dig in and actually make the most of it. So that's why it was so important to me.
Yeah. I was raised very similar to how we're raising Bo, in that my parents, I remember having a college savings account from a very young age. And it was just a standard savings account, but it was in my name and it was probably earning like 1% interest. And my parents would deposit $50 here, $100 here, but they would always tell me that that's where the money was going. It's going to your college savings account so that one day you can go to school. And I knew I was going to college at a very early age. And that's something that Ray Boshara actually talked about on a webinar we did with Capital Group and Kiplinger a few weeks ago. We'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But he cited some research that said that kids who had a little bit of savings in their name early in life gained what's called a college-bound identity.
Yeah.
And that little thing made them, one, more likely to get into college and more likely to graduate. And so it's very important that kids feel that sense of college boundness if that's what you want them to do and if that's what they choose to do kind of early in life. Now, I probably eventually would have created a college savings account for our son because that's what I experienced growing up. But you made sure it was open like shortly after he was born. You were very excited about it. So I'm curious how you learned about 529s and what made you decide to open one so early for him.
So part of it was, like I said, I wanted to make sure early on that he didn't have that experience that I did, like having to go to school and work. But in a weird way, as a money nerd, it was like a badge of honor. because it was like something that I know that only, you know, a few people had, right? Yeah. It was like, man, like you've got all the bases covered. You got your retirement, you've got college, you've got health savings, you've got all these different accounts. And so it was almost like a kind of subtle
status symbol.
It really was in some ways. I'll just be transparent. Like, that's how I felt about it. And it was like, yeah, I want to be able to do that. No different than kind of how I feel about, you know, a brokerage account now, which we'll talk about, you know, in a future episode. But that's something that was really just important to me. And I was like, you know, I want to ensure that there's always something there. And I've thought about just about everything, you know, granted, I can't predict the future. But yeah, that was, those were my original motivations.
So we should probably back up and define what a 529 or a 529 is for those who have been patiently listening to us tease it for the last couple of minutes. What is a 529?
Yeah, so that's a good idea. So a 529 plan, like most investment accounts, it's named after some code in the IRS, right? And so the Internal Revenue Service Code 529 or Section 529 is about college savings plans. And so that's what these investment accounts are about. And basically, they're tax-advantaged investment plans for qualified educational expenses. And so when you think about, you know, all of the different costs. I'm sure if anyone has ever paid for college or been to college, you know it's not just tuition. It's tuition, it's room, board, school, supplies, books, you name it, all of those miscellaneous fees. And it gets very, very expensive. But the benefits of a 529 plan is it gives you the ability to start planning for college long before the beneficiary of the account is even eligible to go to college or even accepted into a college. In our case, we opened it shortly after our son was born. And so you've got this long horizon there for your money to compound. And the benefit of that is very similar to a traditional IRA or any other tax advantaged account, is that that money is allowed to grow tax-free. And you can deduct the contributions to those accounts tax-free. And so it helps to lower your taxable income while also allowing these funds to grow over time. And so it's really, really great. I think, you know, going back to when I first learned about them, I think it was just in a book. I think it was just in a book, but I was just intrigued by it because I just didn't hear a lot of people talking about it. And as I started thinking about some of the habits and things that wealthy people do, I figured like it's all those little things.
It is.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh, it's like if you can avoid taxes, you know, not to get into a political conversation, but if you can avoid or minimize taxes, like those simple acts tend to be so, so helpful, particularly if you're talking about investments and those funds are allowed to compound over time.
Now, when these plans were first introduced, they were pretty much referred to as college savings accounts. Mm-hmm. But in recent years, a few things have happened, and it's even taking us a minute to realize that it's not just for college. First, the accounts can now be used to fund educational expenses from K through 12. However, those withdrawals are limited to $10,000 per year. But it's still timely for us because our son, Beau, enters into pre-K in the fall. And we've decided to keep him in the same private program that he's been in since he was an infant, and it's not free. But it's a reminder that we're on the heels of needing to make a decision about his K through 12 education, where it could be free if we go public, or it could be, you know, an expense for us if we decide to keep him private. But secondly, and probably most important, depending on how old the student will be, is that the contribution limits have increased, which makes sense given the incredible rise in the cost of attending college in recent years. Going back to our webinar, because I'm still like reeling over everything that we learned, Ray said something that has lived in my head rent-free since he said it. And he said that for every dollar you have in student loans, your wealth is decreased by $7. And it actually displaces your ability to accumulate other wealth. So the act of like student loans has a long-term effect on your overall wealth building. And I think for so long, we've only talked about the costs associated with not going to college. And we typically only discuss those in terms of like opportunity cost or missed salary. But because the cost of college has increased so rapidly and there's a heavy reliance on student loans, we can now talk about the financial cost of needing loans in order to go to college. And that's a mathematical decision. It's not, you know, probability and statistics. It's like, this is what it actually costs. So I think if we're going to continue to encourage kids to pursue higher educations, we have to make sure that it's a holistic conversation and that we are just as passionate about the options to finance education as we are the passion that kids should go get it.
Yeah, it's rare that you come across someone that is so passionate about a single topic, right? And so you mentioned Ray Bouchard, but we didn't actually describe who he is. We were fortunate to partner with Kiplinger and the Capital Group a few days ago, as well as Brandon Copeland, who just so happens to be a linebacker for the home team Atlanta Falcons. But he is also, when he's not tackling quarterbacks and anybody else that gets in his way, he's also a huge advocate for financial literacy and actually teaches a class on financial literacy at the University of Pennsylvania. So he is really, really awesome. The entire panel was awesome, and we were glad to be a part of it. But Ray Bouchara is a senior advisor and director of the Center for Household Financial Stability at the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. And he is super, super passionate about 529s. If there's been any innovation or, you know, changes to these plans or just the growth of these plans, I'm pretty sure he has had something to do with it. Right. And so when you start to see these additions to include, let's say, not just college expenses, but K through 12, or, you know, lowering the costs or making sure that they're more accessible to everyday Americans, Ray Bouchara has probably had something to do with that. So I completely agree with you. I'm still kind of reeling from it myself. So the other thing that I was really happy bubbled up into the conversation, because, again, I could directly relate to it, was the role that stress plays in all of this, right? And it kind of makes sense. Like, people may say money does not make you happy, but in reality, the more money you have, in some cases, the more options you have. And when you have more options, there tends to be, you know, less stress in your life because you're not forced into any one particular situation. And Sean McLaughlin, who is a financial advisor based out of Virginia, who's also very passionate about 529, started talking about the role and the importance of saving for future educational expenses and the role that plays in stress and in managing stress. So with that said, I want to talk a little bit more about 529s and some of the things that kind of make them quirky. And this, in my opinion, is a bit of a deterrent because they're really, really confusing. Unfortunately, they're not as straightforward as some of these other investment accounts. So let's just run down the list and some of the things that make 529 plans a little quirky. The first is, and we mentioned this earlier, is that 529s are unique in that they're state sponsored, right? They differ by state. And so we happen to live in the great state of Georgia. That does not mean that we are only allowed to invest or use the Georgia 529 plan. We could decide to use Texas, New York, any of the other states that offer these types of plans. Now, you might be wondering, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just stick with the one that you're in? And you may have any reasons to decide that you don't want to do that. It could be because you're just not a big fan politically of your state for whatever reason. I don't think that's a great reason, but you certainly have the ability to do that. I think a more reasonable reason might be that you don't like the investment options, or you don't like the contribution limits, or any of those other things that are sort of the fundamental mechanics of a particular investment plan. So the good news is you do have the flexibility to pretty much invest or choose any 529 plan that you want. I think that that's actually a bit of a benefit of these things. But the challenge is now you've got almost 45, I want to say.
Yeah, I think it's 47 or 48 states have 529s. And the reason why we're calling this out is because when you research, it's important to research by state.
By state,
So similar to how employer-sponsored 401ks are unique to the employer, you don't look at Apple's 401k to understand what your 401k at Microsoft may be. You need, if you want a 529 plan in Texas, you need to look specifically for Texas. So another thing we learned in our research is that the majority of Americans really don't have another investment account outside of their retirement account. So 529s would be completely new to them. And that matters when it comes to a 529, because I think people have a tendency to view investment accounts the same way they view their retirement account. And because these two accounts have very different purposes, they also have very different limits and very different features. So unlike a retirement plan, you actually don't have a 30 to 40 year time horizon before you need to withdraw these funds. Assuming you want to start using them when a child turns 18, you might have 10, maybe 15 years, and you'll have to factor that into your investment strategy. In other words, you'll want your balance to grow quickly so that you have more to withdraw from when the recipient actually needs it. Now, there are investment options that factor in the shorter timeline, and they're called target date funds. Basically, these are mutual funds that are designed and managed to optimize value over a very specific time frame, like 20 or 30 years. Some are even targeted to specific years. So if your child is slated to be, I don't know, the class of 2041, there may be an investment plan targeted to that specific year.
I love that.
Yeah. Now, before we move on, episode 2 of our podcast is called The Four-Letter F-Word. And if you're not sure which F-word I'm talking about the most expensive one.
Food.
Which, nowadays, it is food. But it's fees. 529 plans are not free. And because they tend to require active management, meaning a financial planner is dedicated to monitoring the performance of the fund, rebalancing, reallocation, they tend to be more expensive. So this is one of the deterrents to this type of account and is one of the other reasons you might be willing to explore funds outside of your state, because some states may have cheaper options with lower fees.
Yeah, I was in that boat as well. I remember when I was exploring 529 plans, and for the record, we did just opt to go for the Georgia 529 plan because it is one of the better options and certainly has features and investment options that we value. But I was in that same boat because I was so accustomed to investing primarily through our IRA and through our 401ks. And so when I was looking at expense ratios, going back to the first episode of our podcast.
The second episode.
Okay. Yeah. I was impacted by that because I was shocked. And granted, you know, really wasn't that much more expensive. But to your point about typical retirement accounts setting the foundation for how people think about all retirement accounts.
And all investment accounts.
Exactly. All I could think about was how much more expensive the 529 plan was. But the reality was it was marginally expensive. But because I knew cheaper options were available, I couldn't quite wrap my head around why I would be willing to do that. And so if you're one of those people that are obsessed with expense ratios, I'm telling you now, you should expect that the funds that are available in your 529 will not be the cheapest available funds that might be available to you through your employer 401k or if you have a self-employed IRA or any of those types of funds. They tend to be a little bit more expensive because we're talking about a shorter time frame. We're talking about
more
funds.
Aggressive.
Exactly. In some cases, they may need to be more aggressive. You're not going to be looking for something that's going to grow slowly because we're talking about trying to optimize growth over a shorter time frame. And going back to your point, especially if you're talking about trying to use these funds for K through 12, you really want to find an interesting balance between maximizing value over a shorter period of time, which sounds like a dream come true, but there are ways to do that. One of the other things that you might want to think about with your 529, if you choose to open one, which we highly recommend, is the approach in which you invest in those accounts as well. So again, because most people are accustomed primarily to investing through employer-sponsored accounts, we are very much accustomed to investing a little bit of every paycheck going towards a particular account. You don't have to do that with the 529, but you can. One of the things you may want to consider is investing in a lump sum early in the beginning of the year.
Right.
And so if let's say there's a $2,000 annual contribution limit and you have $2,000 available to you in the front of the year, you don't have to chop that up into 12 monthly installments or however many monthly installments. You can just decide to front load that. And the other benefit is you allow that money to compound over a longer period of time by doing it that way as well. So that's certainly something to consider. And one of the other quirks that make 529s special.
Yep. And I love that because larger amounts of money compound faster. And so if you have $2,000 in that account in January, that $2,000 is earning interest and that interest is earning interest for 12 months before you deposit the next lump sum.
Yeah. All right. Last quirky feature, but this I think is a good quirk. And it is that 529 accounts are 529 accounts are special in that other people in your family or friends are allowed to make contributions on behalf of the beneficiary. And I absolutely love this. And so being specific, going back to our particular plan, at any point, I can go to our dashboard, download a link, send that link to our grandparents, friends, and family. They can click on it and make a donation to our son's 529 plan, just as you would if I were asking them to purchase something online. That's not a feature that is readily available in your typical investment accounts. But the reason that they want to do that is because it helps to allow everyone to contribute to this plan. It adds a layer of family, or, you know, it's almost like they treat it like a charitable contribution. And the benefit for people who are making those contributions is that they get to benefit from a tax deduction as well. And so if they decide to put some money into that account, they can write that off just as they would if they were making a charitable contribution to the Red Cross or some other charitable organization. So I think that's one of the absolute best sort of quirks that make 529 plans special. But I will say this, and we wrote about this in our book. It's a bit of a funny story, is that some people kind of take offense to that, right? We're a bit sensitive to funding, let's say, your child's or some other child's college education. When we first learned and started investing in it, one of the things that we were mindful of is the number of toys and trucks and cars and teddy bears and all of these things that we were grateful for that would show up on our doorstep for our son. Or we'd go visit the grandparents and there was like another toy there. And we were like, you know what, what would really be nice if maybe you didn't buy another toy and you just made a contribution to his college plan. And that did not go over very well.
Nobody wants to be told what to do.
Yeah.
Except during weddings where there's a whole registry and nobody minds it. But here, talking about Christmas and birthday parties and giving people specific directions, you know, and our families did not go over well.
Yeah, it's an interesting social...
We still sneak and deposit the cash into his account, though.
Oh, absolutely.
If you sent my son a check, it is in his 529.
Absolutely. My father sends a check every single year, and we certainly do not go out and buy our son more toys with it.
No.
It goes straight over. Now, the... Unfortunately for him, he doesn't get the benefit of that write-off, but that's okay. All right.
So not only can other people contribute to a fund, other people can open an account on behalf of somebody else. So as long as you have somebody's social security number, you can open an account for just about anybody. So that means grandparents can set up an account on behalf of their grandchildren. Aunts and uncles can set up accounts for their nibblings, which is a word I just learned. Did you know that?
No.
Nibblings means nieces and nephews. So you don't have to say nieces and nephews. You just say...
Nibblings?
Nibblings, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So if you have nibblings or just a special child in your life, as long as you have their social security number, you can be setting up this account and contributing to it annually. And then when they're of age where they need to have educational reimbursement, you're there. And one of our experts mentioned on the webinar that a lot of states actually have an enhanced tax benefit if you're over 70 years old and contributing to a 529. So if you are a grandparent or you are an older person who wants to contribute to someone's 529, there may be some additional perks in there for you. So look that up based on your state.
Yeah, I absolutely love that because I know for a fact there's someone out there listening that knows or has a brother or a cousin or someone who doesn't quite think the same way that you do, and they're trying to figure out a way to make sure that
their kids are nibbling,
their kid, whoever it is, they care about them, or they want to make sure that they are able to contribute in some way. I absolutely love that feature, and it's one of those quirks of 529s that I think make it really interesting.
Now, one of the biggest pieces of pushback or hesitation that we get when we mention 529s is around whether college will even be relevant in 15 years or if the person that you're saving for will even want to go to college. And first, let me just say that if you're saving for something and then you find out that you didn't need to use the money, that's usually a good problem to have. So this is not something that we need to fret about. You do have options if that's the case, right? So this is not meant to be a deterrent from opening the 529. Doubt is not a deterrent here. The first universal option is that you can withdraw it, and the earnings will be subject to a 10% federal tax penalty that will be deducted from the balance, and if applicable, state income tax will also be deducted. States take different approaches to tax treatment, so it really depends on like where you open the account.
Yep.
And then beyond that, your options vary by state. No surprise there. This is what makes this subject so hard to talk about, is because it's so unique.
There's a lot of
unique.
Moving pieces.
There's a lot of moving pieces.
You don't know
pieces.
How expensive college is going to be. It's yeah. different state by state.
And people tend to like certainty with their investments. They yeah. want to know that the money is going to be used for this particular thing in this particular place. And this is one of those broad, like, no, it's just for education.
Right.
But anyway, depending on where you are, you might be able to, if the beneficiary does not want to go to college, you might be able to, one, change the beneficiary. So if you're talking about siblings or nibblings, the eldest child, if you're talking about siblings or nibblings and the eldest child has leftover money, you can give it to the next child in line. So their younger brother or sister.
I love that.
The second thing you can do is leave it in the account for continued education. So maybe the student wants to go to med school one day or pursue a law degree later in life, like Kim Kardashian. Whatever it is, when they decide, the money is there. And you mentioned Sean earlier. He told a story about a guy who had saved for his children, and there was leftover money after they had come back from college. And this man, this father, had always wanted to go back to school and learn Spanish. It was really important to him for whatever reason. So he used the kids' leftover 529 funds on himself, which was allowed in his state in Virginia. And he enrolled in a local community college and started taking Spanish classes.
Yeah, I love that for a lot of reasons, but particularly when I think about the way that technology is changing the workplace and all of the different skills that, let's just face it, in some cases, predominantly boomers, but also older millennials, they find themselves in a situation where they don't necessarily have the skills needed in order to be competitive in the workplace. And so if you end up in a situation like that, it's good to know that you have access to funds, assuming you have a 529 that you can use to continue your education. And oh, by the way, that's not just for 4-year colleges and universities.
Correct.
This can also be for 2-year vocational schools and trade schools. And
yes.
So basically, if the school or institution is allowed to receive federal funding for student loans, it qualifies as an institution that can be used to fund or be funded by 529.
Correct. So it's a really flexible program. The last option, if your beneficiary does not use the funds or has leftover funds, is that you can gift them to a relative or somebody in need. The program is meant to be portable.
Yeah, I love that. It's a really, really flexible program. There's a perk to that, but because of all the different moving pieces, the different investing time horizon, the differences from state by state, not being able to assess or know with any degree of certainty how much the future cost of college can be, it's like, what exactly am I saving for
right.
and how much? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why. And on top of that, they tend to have more expensive investment options. So I think that's part of the reason why even people who do have the funds available are a bit standoffish and say, that seems a little bit too complicated. But I think they're absolutely fantastic programs. I want to make sure that we break down the fundamentals of 529 plans, specifically as it relates to what is considered a qualified expense. And so qualified expenses or qualified education expenses include tuition, which tends to be the largest chunk,
people, yeah.
right? That's the biggest bit. And then you're going to have that long, long, long list of different fees. I could probably rattle off 10.
But oh my gosh.
It's almost like a hotel.
You yes.
know, there's like room and then there's like city tax, block
yeah.
tax, state tax, county tax,
parking
service
tax,
yeah. resort fee.
Yeah.
It's like all these different things. Same thing with college tuition. But in this case, it can be funded through your 529. So you've got mandatory fees, tuition, textbooks, which mm-hmm. whew, you know those
super
can be expensive, computers, software, mm-hmm. supplies, required equipment, room, board, all of those different things are considered qualified expenses. If you have special needs or need special services, those too can also be covered by 529s. And so think about it. I like to use that and say, oh, well, while I may not know for sure exactly how much it's going to be, I know I'm going to have to pay it.
Yeah, you're going to have an expense from one of those categories.
Absolutely.
At some point. You're going to need a computer or some sort of software.
Right.
Or, you know, a supply. We get a supply list every year from teachers.
Right. So. And it's safe to assume that as the needs for college change over time, they will expand that to ensure that they're covering all of those things.
Yes.
Right. I think it's
that's
safe
been
to,
the trend. Yeah.
Absolutely. So as the costs and the college experiences change, it looks as if 529 is sort of tracking against that mm-hmm. to make sure that the funds can be used to offset some of those additional costs.
Yeah. I mean, after listing the qualified expenses, it kind of helps get rid of some of that uncertainty because everyone can think of at least one of those things on the list that they've purchased in the last year
right.
or two, since last year was an anomaly. Anyway, it feels like a no-brainer thing to participate in. And yet, when we polled the audience during the webinar and asked what's stopping them from opening a 529, most of the people, most of the listeners said it was not knowing how to find one, yeah. where to find one. And so we didn't want that to be an excuse for you today if you're listening and you're feeling compelled. Here are two resources that you can research now. The first is College America. This is the nation's largest 529 provider. It has a lot of actively managed accounts and has a lot of state-specific options for you. And then the second one is Vanguard for the DIY investors. Vanguard also has a 529 program where you can pick your investments or you can choose like a target date fund within their portfolio where they're kind of picked for you based on when you think you'll need the funds. And then the last resource, which kind of goes without saying, is Google. Just Google 529 plans in the state that you're looking to open one.
Yeah, there are tons of articles about them. In fact, I just wrote a little one for Next Advisor. In honor of Father's Day, I was talking about my own experience, shared a little bit of the story that I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, but also framed it up around how I'm going to be doing things differently for our son. And one of those things was investing in a 529 plan. So I think we've debunked quite a few of the things, but let's just run down the list. So first, you don't have to be a parent to open or contribute to a 529 plan. Nope. You can do that for your nibbling. That's my fun new word. Second is your child doesn't have to be a newborn to open one or to benefit from one. Third is you don't lose your money entirely if for some reason your child decides that college isn't for them. There are ways to still get that money. You may have to pay a fee or you can change the beneficiaries and extend those benefits to someone else. Fourth, you can use the money on higher education coursework. It doesn't have to be a full degree. Again, you can use this at four-year universities, two-year, trade schools, and vocation schools. And I'll tell you, those types of schools are becoming more and more important, and there are tons of great-paying jobs that do not require four-year degrees. And so this is something that's really important. And the last is the account that you open, the 529 account, does not have to be the sponsored plan for the state that you actually live in. You can choose from any of the long list of states. And as Kirsten mentioned, you can use Google. There are tons and tons of articles out there, best 529 plans that'll give you a bit of a side-by-side, or you can research on College America and get a bit of a high-level glance to figure out which plan is best for you.
All right.
All right. 529s, 529s, 9 to 5. I've never heard anyone say 529.
No, I've never heard somebody say a 529.
Yeah. Well, I'm holding out for that one. All right. So final thoughts. What do you got?
So I feel like I harp on the pace of change all the time, and I'm starting to sound like Chicken Little, the sky is falling, but I'm going to say it again. I'm going to belabor the point until people start believing me. But the world is changing at the fastest pace that it ever has before. And so part of your wealth plan has to be the cost of education, the cost of keeping up. And like you said earlier, it may be language skills or coding or some other requirement that we don't even know about that we'll need to participate in the economy of the future. But like everything else, we should be talking about it and we should be planning for it. Not talking about it doesn't prevent it from happening. So a 529 is a flexible program that gives account holders and account openers a lot of incentives to participate. So I highly encourage everyone listening to check it out.
Yeah, I've never met anyone that's regretted investing or felt like right. they invested too much.
Right.
Right. And so there's also that little layer. I love that. Okay. My final thoughts are 529 accounts are special in their functionality, in the way that they're structured, in their benefits. They are really, really unique, funky accounts. But I think that what I love about them the most is the gift contribution aspect.
Yeah, me too.
I think, you know, I think back to all of the fundraisers that I've been a part of. I've washed cars. I've watched people sell lemonade and do all of these things.
I just bought us some popcorn. Sorry, right, it's coming.
Girl Scout cookies. These are all things that I believe are part of American culture. But for some reason, when it comes to college education, we add this unnecessary layer and we make being able to afford it a little less accessible. And I think that this is one of the accounts that actually make it easy for people to join in. You know, there's the old saying of it takes a village to raise a child. And I think in this case, this is one of those cases or ways where you can actually allow that village to invest in a child's future. And so 529 plans, I think, are absolutely great. If you don't have one, if it's not a part of your investment plan, I highly, highly recommend you add that. It is flexible, but don't look at all those flexible options and quirks as a negative.
Yeah, don't get overwhelmed.
Don't get overwhelmed by the choice. Just focus on finding one that works for you. Start small. You don't have to do it every single year, but every little bit counts. And the more you do it, the more it'll grow. And I think the easier it'll be down the line for you and the beneficiary.
Yes. And if all else fails, make a song about it. 529, saving up the cost of college.
Oh.
See? It's coming to me.
It is.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. Remember, you can't have a 529 without the number 5. So if you like what you heard, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. We'll see y'all next week.
You sound like Dolly Parton just now.
A 5-star rating and review.